Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne, Director of Education and Online Services for SDPB. SDPB will update you with the latest news. Then following the news, we'll discuss the latest in tech, including a Black Hat wrap-up, Redbox Instant, and others, other items in the news. If you have questions or comments about the cloud, hardware, software, or accessories, the way to connect with us is through our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio. Message us on Twitter at SDPB, and our phone number is 1-800-524-3604. Of course, you can send an email. That address is midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Dakota Midday Tech Radio is on the air after this news from SDPB Radio. Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, August 2nd. I'm Kent Osborne. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. Of course, the popular way to get a hold of us, our email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today on the line, for answering your questions today, our Mac guru, Joel Brovelite. SDN sales engineer Amos Asep is here. NineClouds bro founder John T. Meyer and Jeff Litterick, technology integration specialist in Peer, joins us today on the line. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show, we'll post those to the web shortly and sometimes right along with the show at our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Leave comments and questions there as well if you care to. This is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604, the number, and midday at sdpb.org, the email address. John T. Meyer, we're going to start with you today because I just want to find out how the last 2 weeks has gone. We did quite a bit on the last show on Google Glass. You were just a new recipient of a pair of those. And,
you bet.
Yeah, so how has the last 2 weeks been for you?
It's been good. It's been still a lot of confused looks. I know I talked last show about some of the reactions I got in San Francisco. Here in Sioux Falls, it's been a little bit more curiosity, just complete not sure what it is. But it's also been fun. It's put me in a lot of unique conversations where people walk up and I'm like, yeah, you want to try these on? And then we start talking about it and you can see kind of the discovery looks on their face when they finally like see what it looks like, and then you can kind of almost witness like a light bulb moment where you see, whoa, if I could use it for this, how cool would that be? So I think that's been fun to watch other people, but still a lot of confusion, and I'm still getting used to it myself, just kind of getting, I'm not wearing it every day yet.
So do you feel like you're in that Tom Cruise movie where the, you know, they put the contact lens in and it, you know, does facial recognition?
It's a little Minority Report, except no one else around you is participating. So that part's a little different. But, yeah, it's been fun. And it's been, you know, a lot of people want to talk about it. I've got to do a podcast and be, of course, here on the radio and on TV as well. So it's just fun to kind of be an early adopter and try it out. And I think, again, I keep getting more ideas of how I would use it in the future as we see more apps built on top of the platform and we see kind of the evolution of where the product will go.
Sure. Okay. Well, and again, if anybody has any questions for you on that, we'll be sure to field those later in the show.
Yeah, and if you're in the viewing area, well, in the Sioux Falls area, I should say, send me a tweet at John T. Meyer, and I'd be happy to meet up for coffee. You can try it on. You can take a picture with the glass. I'm happy to be an ambassador of glass, so you can try it on yourself.
Sure, and I've enjoyed seeing the videos you've posted and a couple of snapshots here and there. So be sure to keep us apprised of that. It's a neat technology and something that we'll absolutely be keeping an eye on. One other thing you've mentioned in an email earlier, Chromecast. We didn't get a chance to talk about that last show. Did you have something for that on us?
I was trying to remember, and I went back and checked. It wasn't even out yet as of last show, so we definitely didn't touch about it.
All right.
Touch on it. But a really cool little gadget that came out about 10 days ago, maybe a week, just over a week ago, but from Google, called Chromecast. And basically, it almost looks like a little USB drive, but it actually is an HDMI. So you plug this little gadget, it looks like a little bit larger than a stick of gum, into your TV. And if you use the Chrome browser on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, you can just broadcast directly to your TV. So, you know, if Netflix streaming, you know, Hulu, even just a YouTube video. I mean, it's essentially what Apple TV is, but the kicker here, it's $35.
Oh, okay.
And you just plug it in and you take it with you wherever you go. So I just purchased one. I was a little late on the gig, so I'm they're back order. They sold out immediately at Best Buy and on Amazon. But you know, I think of even going into presentations for clients or giving talks. You know, you always have that awkward moment where you try to hook up your computer and you see if it works or if it fits or it formats.
Right.
This way, you just say, "Hey, I'll plug this into your TV, and if you could pull up Chrome, I'll show you what I want to show you, as long as it's in the cloud." So I think that's really slick. Google and Netflix actually partnered up where if you initially signed up, they would give you 3 months free of Netflix, which is like a $24 value. And to show the popularity, by the second day, they actually canceled that promotion. So
okay,
a lot of people jumping on it.
Let me back up the bus here one more second here. I caught what you said, but it didn't sink in. The device plugs into the TV,
mm-hmm.
and then through the cloud, your whatever hook through Chrome, the browser,
mm-hmm.
is able to display on the TV.
Correct. Yeah. Well, anything that's on your browser would then be on the TV.
Okay, I'm just letting this sink in because
I'm going to put it on. I'll put it up on our Facebook page.
Is that the only application that works between that you can broadcast? Is Chrome or do we see a possibility of more products being able to utilize
sure.
that technology?
Yeah, I mean it's certainly not a brand new technology. I think Google made it specifically to work for their browser, you know, to promote Chrome. Apple TV is the same way, but Apple TV is kind of more like, I don't know what you'd call it, Joel, but kind of like applications. Like you kind of go to the dashboard and you see Netflix and you see Hulu, you see YouTube.
Yeah, that's what it's turned into, you know, as people are, you know, using some sort of set-top device to get media to your television. That's certainly one way that it's being used. So, you know, for $99, it might be a little more full functioning.
Yeah, and I actually have Apple TV and I have really enjoyed it. So when mm-hmm. I first saw Chromecast, I was like, you know, I don't need this. I got Apple TV, and then I thought of the kind of that mobile.
Oh, yeah,
you go
for
in
sure.
for presentation.
Although I did actually do that very same thing. I had to give a presentation on internet security for a customer, and I brought an Apple TV
sure.
rather than bringing a projector, and I just sent everything from my laptop hooked up HDMI to whatever they had and used that rather than monkey with my own stuff. And I didn't have to worry about what cable
setup it didn't take too long.
And so, that way I could use two devices too, which was really nice.
What's the behind the scenes there? Is it using Wi-Fi, Bluetooth? What's the connectivity
uses
between?
Wi-Fi.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have to have an existing Wi-Fi connection or
well,
is
I,
it using the 802.11 between the two devices
between
directly?
Between the two devices.
Okay.
It uses the AirPlay standard, which works over Wi-Fi.
Same for the Chrome?
I don't know, but I doubt that. I assume it's probably Wi-Fi, but I doubt it uses.
Well, and what I'm wondering is that you know it's going to work at my house because I've got Wi-Fi existing there. I can connect up to an existing network.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to work if I take it to my mom's house without having to connect both devices to her Wi-Fi?
Are you talking with the Google?
With the Chromecast.
Chromecast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's actually the intention.
Okay, so there has to be that middle piece in there that.
Yeah, well, I don't think you have to have a network. I believe you can, you know, with whatever. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
here.
The article here just says all you need is a solid wireless network, and you're mm-hmm. off and running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just need to. Okay.
So you would have
you
to connect
have to be able to
it.
Join.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think our Chrome news, and this is what might have confused me last time, was that their store had just opened for the apps that
yeah,
you
we were talking
embed
about that
in the time. In the browser. So.
And this article I'll post here on the Facebook page, you know. And it's a great point. He said one of the best points is it's not just limited to streaming video. He referenced you could connect to sites like music sites like Spotify, GrooveShark, throw that up onto the TV. So if you're kind of in a you know an party atmosphere, you have friends over, say, hey, what do you want to play? It's almost like a you know digital jukebox. And then he also mentioned playing Words with Friends on Facebook. He put that on his Chrome browser, sent it to the TV, and then they collectively played Words with Friends.
What's Groove Shark? I haven't. I've given up on Spotify, but and gone back to
giving
Pandora.
Giving up on Spotify, huh?
Yeah.
Right when it gets popular, you give up on it. You're one of those.
That isn't the
he's
reason.
He's had it so long, he doesn't like it anymore.
You know, to be honest, it's another music player, RDO, Spotify. I can't tell you the individual features of Groove Shark.
I've actually moved on to Google Play now and their ability to, for $7 a month, you can get any music you want, you know, as long as you have a connection, you get to stream it. So it's along that same lines. it amazes me that there's so many, and I have yet to see anyone one system that has major popularity, you know, go away. How many of these can the internet universe
truly
support? Really,
yeah, exactly. Pandora,
probably just the same number as any town can support, either coffee shops or yogurt places. So,
which seems to be quite
the same algorithm.
You need to have
there.
A color and then. Color, insert
and
fruit or vegetable.
Yeah, right,
yeah,
right.
Pretty much.
Right.
Here's, that's how you open a franchise.
Here's why I got rid of Spotify. And just, and this is from the standpoint of listening to music online, you know, at my desk or at home or whatever. As I liked certain songs by certain artists, my playlists on Pandora always got better. On Spotify, they always got worse. And I can't justify that. I don't know why that is, but that's, in a nutshell, that's why I did that.
You know, and I've made the same comment too, and in my case it happened to have been Pandora, but I found if I started a radio station and never touched it, never said yes or no to any of the music, mm-hmm. I always had a great experience. The second I started thumbs upping anything,
those algorithms really work hard.
And I, you know, it's all on individual experience, but that's what I found was just don't touch it, let it play, and the base stations were always the best.
Okay. Well, the last Google, I think, thing we're going to talk about today, maybe, they bought Motorola, and they just released their first, I guess.
We
I
should
don't
say they
Motorola
bought Motorola phone. Some time ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is not new news, but the new news is the phone they released, and that's, is that the M something or other for Motorola that they released? What was the name of that phone? That just came out.
Moto.
Yeah, the Moto.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. not the X that you're talking about?
Yeah, probably.
We're going back
is.
Too far on that.
No, didn't they just release a phone?
Yeah, the Moto X.
The Moto X.
Yeah, so the new one. With
any raves on that?
Moto
or?
X is what it's called.
Have we heard anything good, bad, otherwise on that?
Well, you know, I haven't had one in my hand, but I've read several reviews of it, and I talked to somebody who got to hold one. This is my opinion, without having actually touched it. I think it's a smart move. Google is really, it's more of a software release of a device than it is a hardware. I mean, nothing on the phone is going to blow you away hardware wise, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But what they're really trying to do is play up the hands-free. Basically, it will always listen for you to give it a command, dial a phone number or take a note or something. You don't have to press a button or notify it that you want it to pay attention at some point. You can pick it up and shake it and take a photograph just to make it aware that you want to do it, so you don't have to type in a number or anything. So it's kind of making it a little more accessible. You think that a mobile phone is already super accessible, but if you've ever had to take a shot really quick and you have a passcode on your phone, which a bunch of people do, you know, it takes you like 3 or 4 seconds and the picture's already gone, and, you know, you can expand that out to wherever. It will be interesting with some of the other things that are coming up, whether that winds up sticking, but it's a great release, I think, for basically the first Motorola phone under Google. We'll see if they get sales out of it. I wonder, because it's mostly a software phone, that it's going to stick with a lot of people. But, you know, it's good technology for them to test with. So
I had to chuckle there because I was just watching a TV show last night and something very touching happened between the parents, and the guy says, "Hey, quick, take a picture. This doesn't happen very often." And there's the daughter fumbling with the phone. Yeah. Trying to get logged in, trying
okay,
to launch
glass.
The phone app, yeah. Trying to do this instead of just turning around with a, you know, a point and shoot camera or something. It was a process, and the moment was gone.
Yeah.
But
or she'll be wearing her glasses.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point, and I think I think there's something to what you say there, John. That capability and that software is starting to merge, and the software capabilities of the Moto X are very in line with what you can do with Google Glass. There's a lot of overlapping technology. I don't see that angle a lot being played, but you can see that that's where they're going with that technology. In fact, frankly, I think it would be weird if the phones we carry weren't phones in several years. I mean, I don't think it's going to be too long. And you're
be
not
weird
be
if they are. You mean?
Yeah. Like well, if they won't be.
Sure.
Maybe they won't be glasses, but
yeah, exactly.
I don't see any reason they have to be. The size of
well,
a deck of cards.
Well, that's been the most fun part so far is the hands-free stuff. You know, I have that video of me playing softball, like stepping up to the batter's mm-hmm. box, or when I was. Interviewed by my fiance on KSFY, then I took a picture of her interviewing me, so it was like camera on camera. So that was kind of fun, and I that's what Google really promotes on their video for glasses, like the roller coaster or the father swinging his daughter around.
How stable are they? Can you ride a roller coaster? Can you run the bases? Can you water ski?
Yeah, when I got them in San Francisco, I asked particularly that question. I was like, okay, so what can I safely do on these? They're mm-hmm. kind of expensive. I don't want to break them. And she's like, well, I was just down in Disneyland and did a loop-de-loo on the roller coaster and it was fine. And then I was on second base and someone hit a single and I scored it. It looks a little Blair Witchy. It's kind of like running all over. My head's bouncing, but it stayed on, no problem.
But they're on your face. They're mounted pretty well. You don't feel loose.
I didn't play them. I didn't wear them on the in the field. I was playing shortstop. I didn't want any awkward bounces in the face.
Well, when I had them on, they felt like very good quality eyeglasses. Which I've been wearing glasses now since I graduated high school, and I do everything with my glasses most of the time. I don't even notice, and if they start falling off, I know I need new glasses. So I felt like they were very solid for a pair of glasses. So
yeah, and I don't want to repeat myself again from last show, but if they could fit on like the pair of glasses you have right now to our viewers audience, kind of some hipster kind of Clark Kent black glasses, they're thicker frames already. If you could mm-hmm. put that processor and put that camera on top of that, then you're golden.
Yep. Well, we are out of time for this segment. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, as promised, we'll talk a little Black Hat. Welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne. We've got our panelists today live on the phone, and you can access them. The number 1-800-524-3604. Email midday@sdpb.org, or, of course, we're always on Facebook, facebook.com/techradio. Panelists today, Joel Brovelite, Mac Guru Specialist Guy, Amos Aesop from SDN Communications, sales engineer. I'm always at words to define Joel Brovelite, which and delights him or annoys him, one of the two, I don't know. Nine Claws, John T. Meyer, and Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer. Jeff, our consummate networking, security, and gaming guy. Jeff, we used to talk about Black Hat in some reverence. It was a thing of awe. Is it still? And tell us maybe in a nutshell, folks that maybe thought of Black Hat in the back in the day being a big hacker conference, and maybe what it's turned into.
Well, it's. There's two conferences that kind of back-to-back and kind of all kind of melded into one another over the years. You have the Black Hat and then you have the DEF CON. They're both in Las Vegas. Both are attended about the same people. They have a little bit slightly different focus where DEF CON's more on the security white hat part, the industry, while Black Hat deals... It has a little bit more sensationalism with it, because it's a little bit more of the hacker kind of groups focusing on the bad stuff. This year it's kind of funny. Usually one of the stalwarts of Black Hat, and they actually have a game at Black Hat, is called Spot the Fed. Because the Feds have always attended the Black Hat DEF CON conferences. And have been welcome, and actually they speak quite a bit. The head of the NSA actually was speaking this year. But this year, because of all the leaks and PRISM information leaked out, there was actually a conference call that where they asked the Feds not to come this year, which is the first time they've ever done that. And, well, who knows how successful it really is. They used to be very welcoming, but there is that schism this year between law enforcement and the hackers themselves.
And is that this whole Snowden thing kind of, is that what's sort of tainting everything right now?
Yeah. There's still a lot of Fed speaking. They just asked them not to attend. They think tensions are run a little bit high. They're kind of disappointed in how much the NSA is actually, kind of scooping up and stuff. It's kind of... as political as the hackers are probably ever going to get is something like that. And we'll see if it continues in the S next year or not. Like I said, one of the favorite games there is Spot the Fed. So,
yeah, it makes you wonder if there's, you know, if this is the demise of Black Hat and there's going to be something else. And, the cool kids don't invite everybody else at that one.
Well, and for Black, DEF CON was more of the information sharing in many ways. Black Hat was more about hackers telling the feds what to look out for. And you don't really need to attend for that anymore. So I really don't see any really, downgrade to that at all. And there's actually some really good news stories, not a little bit more technical, maybe not quite as sensationalism as in years past, but there's some really good stories people should be aware of coming out of Black Hat.
Can you give us a couple of examples real quick?
Well, the biggest one you're going to hear about, and your carrier is probably already hacking the phone in your pocket as we speak to fix this, is a SIM card vulnerability that was announced just before and is being presented there, where they can crack the crypto on your SIM cards and control or up your fees on your SIM cards. The carriers are responding by hacking all your phones as we speak to fix that said vulnerability. Basically, a SIM card is the identifier that the carrier uses in your smartphone, or most smartphones. Not all carriers use SIM cards, but most do nowadays, to identify your phone. And you can actually the SIM card kind of moves with you, and it's a unique identifier for the carrier of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it stores the information, can store contacts and stuff like that. And he found a way to crack the encryption that normally protects that SIM card from people over the air, i.e. other people in the network, from accessing information or being able to change that information. He used a kind of Java thing through a text message. So it's totally over the air, totally remote. He hasn't released how to do it because he's waiting for the carriers to fix it. And the interesting news stories mainline are the carriers are actually hacking into the phones to fix the SIM card vulnerability as fast as they can. One of the other big things, besides the whole death of crypto, is kind of seems to be the focus of Black Hat somewhat this year, a lot of crypto problems, is a team of people, experts, actually hijacked a yacht. They did it without stepping foot on the yacht. They did it through GPS manipulation, being able to override the GPS receiver on the yacht and basically, jeez, with parallel courses, send the yacht wherever they wanted to without the crew on the yacht even knowing where they were truly at. Because they were still on the same course heading, they were just slightly off a couple of degrees here and there that slowly moved them off. And they interviewed the yacht crew afterwards, and they didn't even have a clue they were in the wrong spot.
That makes me think of the new Most Interesting Man in the World commercial. They say, like, he wants parallel park to train. It's never his bad.
Yeah, and while most people on land would notice that more than a ship would out to sea and stuff, it does show a very great vulnerability to GPS, which a lot of our weapon systems now rely on. If you can block GPS or confuse our weapons to know that you're going the wrong way, you actually equalize America's technology force pretty much right now in military. So it's a big thing, especially for the military, even with the military using encrypted GPS, which is more accurate. This basically is a local overload of the receiver, not attacking the satellite system itself. So
yeah.
It is kind of interesting. But the main theme really comes in, there's a lot of breaking of encryption that was secure and what the world needs to kind of go do about. The SIM card is probably the ones that affects everybody the most.
What it, what it underscores to me is everybody needs to stay pretty vigilant, never rest and assume that the latest in technology is always going to be there to save your day all the time. So a good reminder, I guess, of that. And I, you know, the interesting one of the interesting things for me was somebody demonstrated that a charging station for an iPhone, and somebody walked up, plugged their iPhone in, boom, they were hacked.
That's one what I actually was talked about last year too. You do get those kind of sensationalists. I mean, the security firms do want to make money, so they kind of hype themselves a bit. Most people don't have to worry about fake charging stations unless they go to a public area, and I always just charge my phone by myself. I don't use public stations anyway. Yes, it is capable of hacking an iPhone pretty easy if you plug into a charger with the malware and start on it. So.
Yeah. Well, speaking of phones, Joel, you have an interesting phone story for us today, or do you have some Mac rumors as well?
Sure. We can do both those. I'll do the story first. About a week ago, it was actually about 6 days ago, my wife was out of town, and she went shopping. She was with my daughter and another relative, got distracted, left her purse, wallet, phone, all in a Walmart shopping cart, and then drove off and then realized and panicked. Luckily, she called me, and I pulled it up on my computer.
Where's my device?
Yeah,
I
find my iPhone app. Yeah. And using that plus Google Maps, we tracked it down, and she recovered it 15 minutes. Oh, she went back to Walmart, and it wasn't where she had left it, and they were no help at the counter, but we found it in the parking lot in somebody's car.
Oh,
so
my.
We were able to recover it, and everything went fine. Didn't have to involve the police. Not that we wouldn't have, but everything worked out well. So.
The car was unlocked. They just opened the car. They talked
to
the
person. No, the person was there and apparently was intending on turning it in, but was looking
for... Yeah, so they weren't stealing it. But
well, essentially, that's the case.
At least when you caught them, they weren't stealing it.
It seemed like that was the case, but sure. It was really awesome to, and it was within a few feet, the GPS that I was...
Does that work even if the battery dies?
It does not work if the phone is off.
Okay. So there are criminals out there. Turn
yeah.
the phone off.
Oh, of course, there's no battery to pull, so
well,
you'd actually have
tell
to
them
turn
that.
It off.
I'm just joking.
But you can set it to as soon as it turns on, it will tell you, send you an email, tell you where it is. So and of course, you can also remote wipe it, so when it gets turned on, it gets wiped.
That is really important. Yeah,
and
get
we'll just dovetail that right to the next rumor. The next rev of the iPhone. It looks like a patent was filed and some hardware has been found that it might possibly have some bio security built in. It sounds like there may be a reader on the next revision of the iPhone built into the home button that would recognize your fingerprint, your thumbprint to turn it on, or fingerprint.
Cool.
So that basically you or whoever you have the fingerprint to will be the only ones that can turn it on. If you don't, it's basically a brick.
So, I love that personally. That's how I sign into my laptop. I swipe my finger on the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Thing,
and that's and actually the big deal is it's not even a swipe. It's the entire button is a reader.
Sure.
So it actually has to read the entire fingerprint, not the swipe.
Well, however they want to do it. But
yeah,
my laptop
no, I'm just
doesn't,
saying it's
doesn't
just
come
another
out of the BIOS.
Layer of, yeah.
My laptop doesn't even come out of BIOS and boot into Windows. Until my fingerprint gets swiped, or or a password gets put in, but that I tell you what, in the couple of months I've had this laptop, I think I've put the password in once, and it just using my finger is far more convenient for getting in.
I'd throw that tip out there to our listeners: if you have an iPhone or Android, definitely put that password lock on there. I do the 4-digit on my iPhone. I know some people even do the 6-digit. But, don't let people that are able just to, find a phone sitting there, swipe it open, and then start
and,
using
and, you
it.
Know, back to the original comment I made, make sure you have your Find My iPhone or iOS device turned on. I have used that so many times I can't even tell you. Not just to find devices, but, if I need to know why my wife isn't answering her phone because she's on call, I can find out if she's at the hospital or...
And that's just in settings, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can just turn it on.
And is that a free service?
It's, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, as long
for
as...
For iOS.
Yeah, for any...
I'm sure Android has something similar.
I would assume, yeah. But it works for all the Apple devices, including the computers and iPods. My daughter has an iPod, and we've found that so many times using that. You can ping it with a sound as long as it has Wi-Fi, which... No, if it's in my house, it has Wi-Fi. So, yeah, I highly recommend you turn that on, even if you have no other device but just the one.
And then I'm going to put you on a spot here.
Yeah.
So Apple typically releases products, it seems like June, October, maybe January.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone sitting at home thinking, my 2-year contract runs out at the end of the summer, should they wait until October? I know you don't know the answer for sure.
I probably would, and I expect the next revision is not going to be like a whole, you know, dot, you know, 1.0 release. It's not going to be like an iPhone 5.
Thing.
I think it's going to be just a bump. But it may have some, you know, if they actually built in this biosecurity, that would be awesome. And frankly, if I were Apple, I'd be sitting there thinking, I'm just going to put that in it and bump the rest just a bit. A bunch of people are going to jump from the phone they just bought to this phone, and then we can do the same thing in a year. People hate it when they do that, but they love their new phones. So,
sure.
You know, I mean, there's a reason they're on top. So,
maybe not a design change, but just a
feature change. I doubt
it's going
to be a design change. You know, they just did this case.
Sure.
And those have to last longer than a year. They put so much R&D into their case type. So I don't think you're going to see a new case. And I think that's going to coincide maybe with the release of the iOS 7. You know, that is supposed to be maybe end of next month, maybe into September, end of this month, I should say.
Yep,
maybe September.
Get on beta right now, yeah.
Yeah. So I think they may, and when that gets announced, you may see a new phone announced shortly thereafter. I'm just guessing here. But I think there's going to be a new phone. Of course, the other rumor is, and it's a pretty solid rumor, that Apple's really doing the low-cost iPhone. Mostly for the international market.
I've heard
but,
of that, yeah.
I think there will be a lot of takers in the U.S. as well. And that's a pretty smart move for Apple.
Well, are they losing features or are they...
You know, they haven't said. I think it'll be much like, you know, similar to like the iPad Mini, which is a lower cost device, but still has all great features. So I think...
And I've seen the mock-ups with like, you know, multicolored, you know, both international and also maybe like kind of the teenager market.
I don't know. You know, I mean, it basically the... I think what you're going to see is a lower-cost iPhone is going to be a lot similar in capabilities to maybe last year's iPhone or this year's iPhone, and then they'll just widen the gap between the two. That's what they've done with iPads. That's what they've done with computers.
Sure.
Apple doesn't like to sell last year's stuff. They just would rather, you know, have a really good device and figure out ways to make it more, you know, inexpensive. Maybe they don't have two cameras. Maybe it has just one camera. You know, there are lots of ways to keep the cost down and stuff like that.
I want to get back to computer security here in a second.
Yeah.
But before we go to break, Joel, you're going to the movies here in a couple days.
In a couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks, okay.
The Steve Jobs movie.
Oh, yeah.
The first one of the two that are going to that have been announced. It comes out on the 16th. So that we can probably talk about, I think our show is on the 16th.
It is.
So we'll probably just maybe talk about that. It'll be all buzzing.
We should get like a tech radio, you know, midnight showing together or something.
I will
like
actually
that.
Be, I will do the radio show, but I'll actually be in Indianapolis at that point. So
I'll have to get the marketing guys on that. I'm going to be in Sturgis for a little over a week, so I'm not going to be putting anything together technology-wise for the next week or so. But, yeah, we'll have to definitely talk about that on the next show and see how his legacy is carrying on in film and other places. That ought to be a neat thing. I do want to get back to device security and low jacks and things like that, go around the table and find out what folks are using. But we'll do that right after this quick break. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne. We have a host of other hosts on the show today as well. You can give us a call. The number is 800-524-3604. The most popular way of getting a hold of us via the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, or our email address, which is midday, MIDDAY, at SDPB.org. And guys, before I lose this thought, we talked a little bit about being able to wipe iDevices, you know, and it's a free service. I believe on the non-Mac side of things, there are, you know, Intel subscription-based ways of doing sort of the same thing. And, of course, there's been LoJack for computers for quite a while. I guess paid services, the only non-paid ones that I've found were sort of university-related ones that failed over the years. But I just wanted to kind of go around the table and just sort of highlight how important it is or not how important it is to our panelists to have on their phones some sort of a security password to get in, and on their laptops or other tablets or things, are we running passwords to get into those, just so that you avoid, one, the annoyance of somebody walking up and being able to have access to your thing, or two, the annoyance of having somebody steal your identity or worse. So let's just kind of go around the table and so to speak. Jeff Litterick, I'm going to start with you because you're probably maybe going to be on the most extreme end of this one way or the other. Locking code on your phone, and what about tracking software on your other portable devices?
Yes to the locks. The tracking I do on my on some of the devices I carry a lot. There's a few mobile devices that I carry very less and I'm very careful with and are big enough, like my iPad and stuff, that I do not do the tracking software on them. But phones, most definitely. My iPod Touch, actually, yes, even though it's only Wi-Fi only. And then lock codes on everything, of course.
Okay. Amos?
I do lock codes on everything, the reason I asked about whether or not the iPhone tracking was free is that I do have a piece of software called Prey on my phone, which is preyproject.com. I have an Android, and that's doesn't natively support that tracking, so I use the software.
Oh.
And that has some limited functionality. You can only find your phone up to 10 times for free, and then after that, you've got to pay for it. So
dumb.
And then it's a monthly fee. And so hopefully I just don't lose my phone.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that I do some technical work for a local adult establishment here in town. And it's a bar. And the number of lost phones at that location is unbelievable.
What do you guys do with them? Just put them in a box? Or?
Well, we hold on to them. Generally, they're reclaimed within a day or two. But sometimes they do sit and go unclaimed, or they get remotely disabled from the carrier, Verizon, AT&T, whoever. And then at some point, they determine when they take them and donate them to, I forget the name of the place, but there's some place you can donate phones to where they can use them for 911 services or women's shelters, that sort of stuff. But the number of phones I see turned in there has absolutely prompted me to say, I've got to have a lock on my phone, because who knows what you can get into or what you can do with a phone if you find somebody else's. So,
yeah, with more business apps making their way onto personal devices or the other way around, it's
true.
It's a must. And I'm just assuming on your guys' side, John and Joel, it's a must.
I'll let John answer and then I'll answer.
Oh, I just do. I mean, I don't do anything fancy, but I do the standard iPhone and MacBook passwords just to get into the device. I'm going to post this link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio. One research regarding the iPhone said, one guy said over 204, he analyzed 204,000 passwords. And 10 passwords made up 15%, meaning that the top three being 1234, 0000, 2580, which is straight down the middle of the keyboard, and then 1111.
I would also recommend those, but the one right down the middle. That was an interesting one.
Have the four-digit password, but also, come on, customize it a little bit.
Yeah, come up with something. I don't, I probably shouldn't say this in the air, but I'll go ahead and say this on the air. I don't have passcodes on my mobile devices at all.
I know.
Yeah. No, you don't. I do on my computers only because, they sit out and I have them come up. I have work on them as far as graphic design or music stuff, And I have it go to the screensaver so that if something were to happen and a six-year-old were to come by and erase some of the work that I've done, which would be bad. But it's not a complicated password. And frankly, it's because of what I mentioned before. Because I have the Find My Computer, iPhone, iPad device, if I lose my phone even for a minute, I've got another device somewhere nearby. Even if it's not even mine, I can log in via web browser to any of them, and I can find it or shut it off or suspend it. I can do it super fast. And even if somebody clever would have gotten a hold of it, as I mentioned, I can have it wipe on boot up. So if they turn it on, it's wiped and it's locked, and then I know where it is. So I figure that's about as safe as anything.
Sure. Well, at least you've got some precautions in place, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
And actually, to be honest with you, I think this is going to be not much of an argument in a few years with the biosecurity that I talked about.
Yep.
You know, as soon as that happens, and you know, that's great for your phone, but think of it in this: it's just a software app to write it to say, oh, you want to log into Facebook? Thumbprint. You want to get your email? Thumbprint. You want to log into Amazon? Thumbprint.
Well, and even let's go a step further. Our apartments, our homes.
Exactly.
You know, we can get rid of keys.
For sure. I mean, I think this whole password, remember password thing, which is a nightmare right now, frankly, I think that's going to be irrelevant in not that long.
That would be welcome news to me.
I think to everybody. I mean, that would be so much better. Yeah. Yeah. I think.
We do have a phone call. Let's get to Doug before the end of the hour here. Doug from Winter. Haven't heard from you in a while, Doug. Keeping busy?
Oh, more or less. I could tell you long stories, but anyway, I won't.
Yep.
You don't have time for the bull BS. one thing that I happened to stumble onto just in the last day or two here, one of my friends got signed up on one of the low-cost phone, you know, like $10 a month, unlimited calling, et cetera.
Sure.
Well, if he calls my cell phone, his number shows up correctly. But if he calls through a landline, my landline phone, the number that shows up can be any kind of a number, to totally different area code, prefix, the whole works. It can be scrambled. And I talked to the guys at the local phone company here, Golden West, and they said that this is becoming a major problem, or not a major problem, but an annoying problem, that when some of these outfits, the calls get looped through so many circuits and connections that the original caller ID information gets dropped.
Hmm.
And I got to thinking about it afterwards, I've had number show up on my caller ID, and if I try to call them back, I'll get this number's been disconnected, or you'll get something totally different than you get a fax number or something that obviously the call didn't come from.
Huh? Yeah, that's odd. That
I don't know if that's what
built-in functionality for burner phones automatically untraceable.
Yeah, I don't think it's that so much as as you mentioned, calls don't get routed through wires anymore. They go routed through computers, and it's just it's all done via software. And frankly, that's mostly because a lot of these services may use one phone number for or line for several people. I assume they would consider that to be the reason they can charge as little as they do. So I don't believe there's any fix to that. You're going to see more of that.
All I'm suggesting is that if people try to call back a number and find it doesn't work, that this might be part of the problem.
Undoubtedly.
I appreciate the call, Doug. Thanks for pointing that out. And
yeah, one.
Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple other little more on the technical side. A friend is in a nursing home, and he had Wi-Fi connection in the nursing home but no computer. And I got him Shopko had a sale on a Polaroid 8-inch tablet, a 7-inch tablet for like $100 or so. But anyway, 5 minutes after he got it, he was online with it. And I played with it before I sent it to him and decided to get one. And there's one thing that people are recommending, and maybe you've heard of it, is Kingsoft Office for those tablets.
I haven't heard of it, but we'll take your recommendation.
Yeah, take a look at it, and it's an app that's available free. So, anyway, that's
a tad bit
of the news here. And other than that, you probably don't want to hear about the tick bite I got that swelled up. And
probably not,
red.
but out in Winter, wave high to the motorcyclists going by, Doug, and have a great weekend.
Oh, there's lines of them sitting on the gas station lots and restaurants here today.
Yep. Thank you much.
Raining.
Yep. Have a great week. Have a great weekend, Doug. Yeah. So, Amos, we want to get back to you. It's no surprise to you that folks are finding these tablets pretty darn handy these days.
Yeah, the tablets they're finding handy. I mean, I see them everywhere. Whether it's an iOS device or whether it's an Android, and sometimes I'm seeing, one of the things that I've been seeing most recently is that combination phone and tablet. They're uniquely calling them phablet.
Phablets?
Yeah, tablet. You know, they're tablets.
Phablet.
Yeah, PH, absolutely. You know, they're phones. They've got the phone functionality, but they're the size of a small tablet, and they're difficult to fit in your pocket, I would think. But I'm seeing these a lot more, and they're the Galaxy Note and some other variations. But I'm wondering if that's going to cross over into the Apple world, too.
Well, you know, I thought about that, and you know, they did that a while back. It was called the Newton.
Oh, sure.
And they decided that might
be too big.
You brought
that in.
I did bring that in.
That was a phone?
No, it wasn't. Okay. Actually, you could get a phone. No, it wasn't really. But it was stupid big and couldn't fit in your pocket. So that's
sure.
That's about as close as the – and yeah. Jobs wasn't at the helm at
of
that
course.
Point. So.
And, you know, I could see the it would be nice because it's easier to watch a movie or video or whatever than it is on your generic phone. But to have it to carry that size of device around is really...
Yeah, to be the guy to put it up on your ear
right,
making a phone
right.
call.
It's bad enough to take pictures and or video with your iPad, but to actually make a phone call with it. And to yeah. not have a hands-free system worked out. Please, if you're going to call...
Now, that would make sense.
...with a telephone book,
yeah.
please have it hands-free.
If you had some sort of Bluetooth
The one thing
device.
I was thinking when Doug called in there with that with his point was, you know, we talked about getting rid of passwords. I just kept thinking, well, we're going to be getting rid of phone numbers someday, too. I mean, I just think your phone, you'll click an avatar. You know, you'll already be connected to these people, and you just click John's face when you want to call John. You don't need to... Because I don't even remember people's phone numbers anymore. As soon as
yeah,
we got
I think we've already
book,
passed that. That ship's already sailed.
Yeah, that's. I find that to be terrible in that I do not know one telephone number.
I remember when I was a kid, I knew dozens.
Well, yeah,
I can call my
seventh grade friend, but yeah. I can't right. call my mom. I don't
You're
know
right. I'm with you. I'm right. I remember all sorts of phone numbers that are useless and dead now. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, I thought of something that I was going to mention at the top of the show because we were talking about Netflix streaming and other things, and that's a service I've recently, and by recently I mean in the last couple hours, I needed to try it to talk about on the show, of course, not prepping for a trip or anything like that. But Redbox has a new service out called Redbox Instant. Have we seen this? If not, I'll just go on with it.
It's with Verizon, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe you can tell me, is Verizon just kind of a sponsor of this, or is there some technology behind it?
Yeah, I believe it's just a partnership.
Okay.
And I think it's Redbox going, hey, you know, for a while we were beating up Netflix, and darn it, we don't have a film studio, so what can we do to get back on the top here? You know, I mean, I think they're seeing the writing on the wall that, you know, DVDs for a dollar killed all the video stores, but streaming video is going to kill all the little boxes with DVDs in them.
So they've got that now, and here's how they resurrect the boxes in the stores now is, well, $6 a month, you get the streaming service. $8 a month, you get 4 DVDs as well. So you get the credits to go to the box to get the movie to take home.
Right.
$9 a month, you get Blu-ray DVDs. So you get 4 Blu-rays a month for $9 plus streaming.
And you know, one of the things I find about Redbox that I really enjoy with that service that I don't get from Netflix or Hulu or whoever
is
else.
Is that when it's really sunny, you can't touch the thing
to
the
yes,
screen?
Yes, that too.
And then you got to lift that thing up?
Is that, right, yeah. Is that you have to be careful who's standing behind you
right, with right,
their
right.
choices of video? Is that when I'm traveling, you can stop at any Redbox, get a video, drive 2 hours away, drop that video off, pick up another one, and keep going. And you don't have to have brought it along. You can think of it as an afterthought. It's one of those things that that traveling and being able to drop off anywhere is a great
I think there's
service.
Still a marketplace for it. It's kind of that in the moment, like you buy your groceries and you're walking by in Hy-Vee, and you're like, hey, you know, we could watch a movie
for
tonight.
Sure. I think it's a good deal. I think this combination that you're talking about, though, Kent, is probably not going to get legs until they untether it from a particular carrier. Because right now they're only getting a portion of the market. So you have to be a Verizon subscriber, basically.
Nope.
You don't?
No.
Oh, really?
Nope.
I thought you, because I just ignored it when I thought that was the case. Okay, I'm wrong.
I could be stood corrected, I guess, if that's the proper
verbiage.
Yeah, I
thought you had to have Verizon access. I could be wrong about that. If you don't, I think that's smart. I still think they would be better off doing it themselves, but they probably just don't have the technology to.
There's a 1 month trial. I logged in with my credit card, and boom, I was watching a movie.
Brilliant.
So
how's the movie selection?
I didn't get past the first screen and found one I wanted. So they look to be first runs. They're not the ones that I've seen because I don't go to a lot of movies. But I guess you tell me in 2 weeks.
Right,
what you think
of
the movie selection compared to Netflix. Now, most of the time when Netflix is up on my TVs at home when I'm walking by, it's former network TV shows that are now released on DVD or whatever, and the kids are watching an entire block of them. So I guess I don't have a firm grasp for the latest in the movies that are released. But let's set that as a topic for the next show, because we can talk about the movie studios and how many awards just got won by streaming movie pioneers and things like that too.
I think there's a lot to talk about. I think there's a worth
a refreshing look at that. And then we'll also John T. We didn't get a chance to talk about the Innovation Expo,
but we've got time because
we'll be about a month out on our next show, August 16th. So let's go ahead and mark that down to talk about as well. I want to thank our panelists today, Mac Guru, Joel Borovlight. Thank you so much, Joel. Nine Clouds, Bro Founder John T. Meyer. SDN Sales Engineer Amos Aesop, thank you so much. And from Peer, of course, Jeff Litterick, a Technology Integration Specialist there. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we talked about today, those are probably already on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. You can interact with us there today and tomorrow and for the next couple of weeks as well.